Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Today on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. And this is our show for December 7th, 2024. By the way, you should know there are those of us who are old enough to remember this when history was actually taught in schools. December the 7th is Pearl Harbor Day. That's the day when the Japanese attacked our naval base at Pearl Harbor in an attempt to destroy the fleet. They really wanted to destroy the fleet, especially the battleships and the aircraft carriers, and unfortunately for their plans, the aircraft carriers were busy delivering aircraft to other places, to other spots for defending the United States of America. We won't go into what all the background for all that, but it's an important date in history. It's the day we entered World War II, which had already been going on for over 2 years in Europe, and over, 4 years at least in Asia. And by that I mean the Japanese attacking and being very aggressive in China. Now, interesting, the Japanese didn't really stop their onslaught against the Western powers. They were picking on places like Korea and China. They weren't really picking on the Western powers, the Americans, the British, the Dutch, the other still colonial, the French, other colonial powers in the Pacific. No, they did that all on December 7th, 1941 as well. That's an important thing to remember. They didn't really start the wider war, the war for what they called, the Japanese called, the Greater East Asia Co-Prosperity Sphere. Fancy language for basically all these conquered peoples who the Japanese would move in, take over, take their raw materials, which Japan was woefully short of. So rather than buying the things that they needed, they chose to go in and take them. I mean, there's nothing new about that. So it began nearly 4 year involvement in 1941 through 1945, and the war officially ended, I think, in September of 1945, with the surrender of the Japanese. Of course, it ended in Europe on May 8th, 1945. The official victory over Japan Day is August 15th. But there was also the day when the actual surrender, the Japanese announced they were surrendering on the 15th of August, 1945. And they actually signed the document on the 2nd of September, 1945. So that's not really what this show's about today, but it's a good historical reminder. We should keep some of these things in mind. You can't store all these dates in your head. And I've been accused for many years. I like to play trivia games. And I'm not really good at things like modern music and modern literature. I'm much better at history, current events, and that kind of thing. And even I'm getting rusty on current events. It's hard to keep up. But I have a mind where I tend to collect useless information. And I know some of you out there. By the way, this show only has, after this, 4 more episodes. Well, after today, it's 3 more. The 14th, the 21st, and 28th. Why is that? The radio station will be transferred to another company, and it's been sold. I won't be on the air anymore, and I know some of you will have this reaction. And And some of you will have this reaction. And some of you will just say, meh, you don't care. And I would hate that. I would much rather be sent out on one of those two high extremes and not the meh. And I know that my tens of listeners out there, my tens of loyal listeners, you guys will be disappointed. Other people will say, good, I don't have to call a radio station and complain anymore. That's fine. And you're right, you don't have to anymore. I won't be around. I am trying to fix the Principled Policy website. I just don't have any money to put into it. And, web work costs money. So that's where it stands. I think I know what the problem is. I can't seem to fix it. And it's something to do with the way my server is connected. I don't completely understand it, and I don't have $150 to have somebody come in and fix it. Right now, my company is also closing, which is strange. I keep telling people that I'm retiring, but I'm not really. I'm not really retiring. I'm going to do something else. My company, Rainrock Nutritionals, which has been a sponsor of this show since we started, along with Barry Sheets Company. Barry Sheets was Principled Consulting. And unfortunately, as you are aware, my co-host Barry Sheets died in July of 23. It doesn't seem like that long, and yet it seems like forever. So in any case, we'll keep bringing you quality programming, and some of you can put that in quotes if you'd like, but we'll continue to bring you quality program and programming and analysis of things that are going on until we're done here. And maybe after that, I'll just do podcasts on the website. It's very possible. Or maybe I'll go back to writing. I much prefer to write. I don't prefer to do the radio thing. So, but in any case, some of you may take what I'm saying and apply the opener, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. By the way, a lot of people think that that is Shakespeare, and it really does sound very Shakespearean, doesn't it? It's Sir Walter Scott. So next time you're in a trivia game like I am and somebody asks you for who said that quote, you'll know it's Sir Walter Scott. And for those of you who hate trivia games, I get it. I really do. There are things I hate to do too. And you may not have the kind of brain. I had friends, so I was doing for a long time, I was doing a weekly, we would go weekly to a trivia game at a place in Granville. I live north of Granville. And we would go there and play trivia. And every week they would tell me they'd been studying all week. And I go, I hate to tell you this, you can't study for trivia. And they go, what do you mean? I go, the stuff that comes up in a trivia game is the kind of useless information that my mind naturally, they go, we want to, be able to play like you do. And I go, you can call it a curse, you can call it a talent, you can call it a gift. But some of us just have that kind of mind. My son-in-law and I do very well together when we play trivia because he's better at the modern stuff, and I'm better at, he's very historically minded. He and I enjoy the same kind of videos on YouTube that drives our wives nuts, my wife and my daughter. We watch things. There's a guy on the internet on YouTube his name's Drakenafell, and it's all Navy all the time, all naval stuff, ships and that kind of thing. And you heard me on here after my trip to Mobile, Alabama. We went to the USS Alabama. I loved that. And we went on a submarine down there that's displayed along the history submarine display down there. And I encourage you to go. But it is what it is. I love to play that stuff. My son-in-law loves to play that stuff. Everybody else is like, oh my gosh, do we have to do this again? And that's the way it is. Today's show, what I really want to do is I want to discuss, by the way, another piece of business before we go into that. As you know, I've announced this before. I'm an elder at Providence Presbyterian Church. We're an Orthodox Presbyterian Church. Orthodox meaning that we're not Eastern Orthodox. We're Orthodox insofar as we are not a liberal Presbyterian Church. We are a conservative Presbyterian Church. We do hold to the Westminster Confession of Faith and other historic documents. Well, mostly we hold to the Bible and what it actually teaches. All the Westminster Confession of Faith is a basically church doctrine sort of boiled down into sections with proof texts and that kind of thing. And we are a conservative church. Providence Presbyterian Church, OPC. We're on Summit Road, south of Broad Street, just south of Broad Street in Pataskala. And why am I going through all this? Well, I would really like to invite you to join us. When you hear this, it will be tomorrow. Tomorrow night at 5 o'clock. That's December the 8th at 5 o'clock at Providence Presbyterian Church, OPC, on 7095 Summit Road in Pataskala. We have our annual lessons and carols. And what is lessons and carols? It's essentially Bible teaching surrounding the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ, his birth, and along with carols. We will be singing Christmas carols out of our hymnal. And our little children will be giving a presentation as well. It's a short presentation because they're little. And when I say little, I mean little. My granddaughter's in it. She's 5. So, you know, you can't train them to do, handles the Messiah. That's not going to happen. They will do a small presentation. But we invite you to come and visit with us at, 7095 Summit Road, Providence Presbyterian Church, OPC, in Pataskala. And we would love to have you. Please come and visit us. Come see me. Generally, I'm the guy in the sound booth running the camera. I'm audiovisual there, and we'll be back in the back. It'll be live streamed on YouTube as well at our Providence OPC channel. And if you're interested in what I'm telling you, you can go there and you can see. I think we've got all the sermons archived, except when the equipment failed, which has happened more than once since actually the pandemic, because we started doing live casting during the pandemic, so that even though the building was closed for a short time, 5 weeks, I think, we still made the podcast, the live cast available to our members and to our non-members. So there's you don't have to put in a password. You can just go to Providence OPC in Pataskala. If you do a search on that, our stuff will come up. And look under live, because that's where the live tab, that's where all our live recordings are. And please check us out. Have a look. Come see us on the 8th, 5 p.m. What I want to talk about today, and I know we're a quarter of the way through the show, and I want to talk about today is the shooting of the CEO of United Health Group. Which includes United Healthcare, which, by the way, is the largest health insurer in the country. I think they cover around 50 million people out of 340 million people. That's a lot. That's a large percentage of the healthcare that's available. And United Healthcare, the CEO, was murdered in New York City as he was prepared early in the morning, I think around 6:30 a.m. He was shot by a gunman. And interestingly enough, I went out and was watching some of the coverage on this thing, and someone said he was a mass this news reader said mass gunman, MASS. It's unmistakable what she said, a mass gunman. Well, what she meant was, it took me a while to figure this out, masked. He did have a mask on. And the police are certain that this was a targeted killing. There's no doubt about that. The murder of this man, he was picked specifically. The person who shot him knew exactly who he was and knew who he was looking for. And he popped out with his mask and his backpack and his pistol, drew his pistol, shot this man three times, as near as I could tell. I watched the film. There are places where you can find the film. I found the whole thing on a reporter named Glenn Greenwald. He has a show on that he has on Rumble and YouTube. I honestly like to watch it on Rumble because he has to pull punches on YouTube. Rumble is wide open west. You can say what you need to say without fear that YouTube will demonetize you. Because they will. If you show, there were people who were hesitating to show the whole thing because they didn't want to be demonetized. Well, in any case, this gunman, who is still at large, as I record this on the 6th, December 6th, the Friday, he's still at large, and he's seen to escape in the video. He essentially pops out from behind a car, shoots this man, and actually jams his gun at least twice. Because he has to clear a jam. Now, what does that mean? It means that the gun has a silencer. It's a semi-automatic pistol, and it has a silencer or a suppressor. They're calling it a suppressor. It's a silencer, and the gun jams up on him at least twice. He has to clear a jam, which means usually that he's using ammunition that is possibly subsonic, what they call subsonic ammunition. A lot of times that gets used in target loads, and semi-automatics, and it can cause not enough gas to blow back the receiver. What that means is on the top, the slide, you have to clear the receiver, which is the place where the bullet goes in. In a semi-automatic weapon, what happens is that they use a gas that brings the slide and the hammer at the same time, hence the semi-automatic. But it brings the slide back, clears the shell, the spent shell that's in the casing, cocks the hammer back, and loads the next bullet, which is why you have to pull the trigger each time. As an automatic weapon, you just pull the trigger, and that all happens automatically, hence the name. Machine gun, it uses gas, and it pops that bolt back, ejects the spent cartridge, loads the new one, recocks the device so it's set to go. And as that bullet hits and the bolt or the slide go all the way up, the gun automatically fires. While you're pulling the trigger, it'll automatically fire. Okay, so we watched the man do this. Now, I'm going to play you a video from a guy. Obviously, you won't be able to see it, but you'll be able to hear it. And what hearing is the most important part in this thing. His name is Dr. Todd Grande. And I'll be quite honest, I've had to speed this up. Because Dr. Grande talks like he is doing an ASMR video. If you don't know what that is, they're on social media, and it's supposedly relaxing. ASMR stands for an autonomous sensory meridian response. And you can look that up, ASMR. I won't go into it. It's supposed to be a pleasant, relaxing feeling. And Dr. Grande does a very relaxed, he's obviously some kind of psychologist. I've watched a few of his videos, and he does analysis of a situation on the basis of psychology. And some of it is good, and some of it is gobbledygook. I think he's pretty good on this particular thing. So I'll cue that up.
Today I will analyze the case of Ryan Thompson. First I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis.
I've skipped some of the background stuff here. And the reason I did that was, you don't care. You don't care where he went to high school. You don't care where he went to college. What you may be interested in is how much money he makes as the CEO of United Health Group. He makes $10 million a year. That's an awful lot of money. I'll be quite honest. I think we have a problem with CEO salaries. executive salaries in general, while certain things are going on. However, it is the way it is for now. I'm not one of those people that seeks government intervention, but $10 million a year for a place that, well, we'll get into that later on. It'll become important. In the meantime, we're going to go to the crime itself.
Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On December 4, 2024, Ryan Thompson was in New York City to attend an annual investors meeting for UnitedHealthcare. He was going to announce predicted revenues of over $450 billion. The meeting was at the New York Hilton Midtown on 6th Avenue in Manhattan.
$400 billion with 50 million healthcare recipients, healthcare people who have their health. It's not just healthcare. It's Medicare supplements. It's all kinds of things related to healthcare. So this is one of the biggest players. This is the biggest player. This is the 800-pound gorilla in the room right here, UnitedHealth Group. And we're going to go on. Basically, what Dr. Grande is saying that he was there to announce at a stockholders meeting how well the corporation was doing.
And scheduled to start at 8 a.m., Ryan was staying in a hotel across the street. At about 6:45 a.m., Ryan left his hotel and walked on the sidewalk along West 54th Street toward Hilton Midtown. At this point, a masked gunman wearing a black hoodie stepped out from behind a vehicle holding a 9mm semi-automatic pistol, which appeared to be equipped with a suppressor. The gunman pointed the pistol at Brian's back and fired a few times as Brian was walking away from him. The weapon appeared to malfunction. The perpetrator could be seen pulling the slide back and hitting the weapon like he was trying to correct the malfunction. After the shooting, the perpetrator walked away calmly. Brian was struck once in the back and once in his right leg. The police were called at 6:46 a.m. and arrived at 6:48 a.m. 50-year-old Brian Thompson was taken to a nearby hospital where he was pronounced dead at 7:12 a.m. Here is what the police found during the course of their investigation. At 6:15 a.m., the gunman was captured on video leaving the 57th Street F train stop and walking along 6th Avenue. About 100 feet away from the subway exit, he was captured on video at a Starbucks where he purchased coffee, a water bottle, and two power bars. He placed the coffee cup and the water bottle in the trash. The police recovered these items. At 6:30 a.m., the gunman was captured on video. The suspect made his way to Hilton Midtown and waited outside the building.
What's not on here is the fact he showed pictures of the gunman. So there are pictures released of the gunman. And most of them you may have seen have a mask on. However, they captured him at that Starbucks without his mask. So there are facial, don't kid yourself, these guys have all the bells and whistles and what will be made available to them from places like the FBI and other federal law enforcement. They'll have facial recognition software. And the point he was making there with they recovered the cup and the water bottle is that they have his DNA. Yeah. You may have watched on these crime dramas that what happens is essentially they'll hand people like a Coke or a cup of coffee or whatever, a cup of water or a water bottle. And then they'll take that item and take it in and have the DNA from the person who drank from it analyzed and put it in their database so they can match it against the DNA taken from the crime scene, or to identify, in this case, to identify the person. Now, do we all have DNA in the system? No, we don't, but we have a lot of situations now where people are caught because there is DNA on file for, in fact, a case like this just happened in Pennsylvania and in, oh gosh, there were two states, Pennsylvania and Michigan. Michigan had a DNA sample from a rape that occurred in the 90s, and a very similar rape occurred in Pennsylvania near the same time, and it turns out that the same person did these in Michigan or in the Detroit area and State College, Pennsylvania, and in the 90s, and DNA caught the person not because they had that person's direct DNA. They had the sample from the rape kit. What they didn't have was a direct sample from the perpetrator, knowing who the perpetrator was, because his DNA would, you know, he'd been arrested or whatever. No, what they did was one of his siblings went to one of these companies like 23andMe or one of the companies that specializes in DNA, your DNA test, which frankly, I have never done and would never do. No point in it. I don't need to know what my complete ancestry is. That's me. Some of you are curious. Well, what happened was they had a DNA sample from one of his brothers. So what they did was, or maybe a brother or a sister. So what they did was they went to these companies and said, we need you to test this DNA sample against your database. Because once you have that done, your DNA goes in a database. And they did, and they said, okay, there are three brothers. This DNA sample is from one of the three brothers. That's how closely they could tell. And they went through, and they figured it out, and they figured out the one brother was the perpetrator. Now, I don't know about you, but that's kind of scary. But it's also not necessarily a bad thing that you, and in fact, in California, not just in this case in Pennsylvania, but in California, what was the name of the killer? There was a killer. It was the Golden State Killer. And the Golden State Killer turned out to be a fellow. They caught him. This is years after his last murder. He was caught because his sister submitted a DNA sample to one of these companies, and they matched it to the DNA from one of the kill sites. And he was arrested. His last killing was in the mid-1980s, and he was not caught until 2018. And it turns out he was a police officer. He was a local police officer in the 70s and got fired for shoplifting. Yeah, it's a thin line sometimes. Not always. I have a great deal of respect for policemen who lay their lives on the line very often to protect and defend us, which is their motto, to protect and defend. There are bad ones. Just like in any profession, there are bad ones. And that's part of what we're dealing with. Not to editorialize too much, I don't think this murdered guy was much different from any other CEO of healthcare companies or many other companies. That's not my point. My point is that there are bad players in any profession, and that's not my point here. Okay. My point is that DNA evidence is very important. Now, I'm a biochemist. Many of you know that if you've listened to this show for a while. I'm a biochemist. When I was in biochemistry, I graduated in 1989 at Michigan State University, and it was a top 25 biochemistry program at the time. I did take DNA training, and I did run Southern blots to do DNA analysis. I also did gel analysis on DNA. We actually cloned E. coli that was immune to antibiotics. Now, you said, that sounds horrible. It could have been if we didn't learn to do good lab procedure, and that was the whole point of teaching us that. At the end of the experiment, everything went to a hazardous waste and got autoclaved. If you don't know what an autoclave is, it's a sterilization unit, and all those samples were autoclaved. If we'd managed to carry it out of the lab, what damage could we have done? Probably not much. Nature has a way of finding those oddballs and squeezing them out eventually. What happens usually when you re-engineer things like E. coli? Nature has a way of coming in and wiping out the oddball genes. It's the beauty of God's design. God has made it so bad, really, really, really bad things generally don't happen. And don't get me started on viruses. But in any case, I have a degree in biochemistry, and I did study DNA. It was not my focus. My focus was more on, I was more interested in protein chemistry at the time. And I eventually ended up as an analytical chemist. and didn't do much biochemistry except for using what I understood when I came to my job as the CEO of Rocky Fork Formulas, which owns Rain Rock Nutritionals. I was involved in herbology. I did a lot of research on that, looked at a lot of things. There's a lot of stuff out there, and I did apply my biochemistry, and people would say, why is this reaction happening? And I'd look at what was going on, and I'd search the literature and that kind of thing. Okay, that being said, they have his DNA, and they have a picture of him. They have face recognition. They have, and they know. Dr. Grande is going to explain. Well, I'll let him explain this.
Building for a few minutes. Presumably, he was waiting for Brian. This was a targeted attack and not a random killing. After shooting Brian at 6:45 a.m., the gunman made his way across 54th Street and fled north through an alley leading to 55th Street. He made his way east to 6th Avenue and somehow obtained an electric bicycle. The perpetrator rode north on at 6:48 a.m. So by the time the police arrived at the scene of the shooting...
That's an important consideration. You don't get to take those e-bikes. Those are city supplied. And the way you get an e-bike, if this is the case, he may have stashed it there. It's entirely possible. But usually those are rentals, which means you have to put a credit card in to get an e-bike. There are lots of places that have those. You can pick up an e-bike and ride around. And once you rent one, you leave it in a place and go in a restaurant. Somebody may come along and take your e-bike. Doesn't matter. You pick up another one because you've already rented it. You don't have to pay another fee. You just, in some places. Now, other places, maybe you have to have the same one. I don't know totally about that. But the fact is, he would have had to somehow paid for an e-bike.
Entering Central Park on Center Drive at 6:48 a.m. So by the time the police arrived at the scene of the shooting, the gunman was pretty far away. The police said that the perpetrator exited on the west side of Central Park, but they did not mention anything about the bicycle. At the scene of the shooting, investigators found three intact 9mm cartridges and three spent cases. The cases had the words deny, defend, and depose written on them. This is
important stuff. I understand what he's going to say, and he's going to explain it, but the words are not exactly correct. Not shockingly, they're not exactly correct, and the gunman was trying to say something. We don't know for sure exactly what he was trying to say.
Similar to a common phrase associated with insurance companies, delay, deny, and defend. Insurance companies often use these tactics to avoid paying legitimate claims. A cell phone was found in the alley the perpetrator used to escape, which the police believe may have belonged to him. On the day after the killing, the police released an image of the gunman not wearing a mask. The gunman was smiling in this image. Now moving to my analysis. Here are my thoughts on a few areas that stood out to me in this case. Item number one. At the time of his death, Ryan was the subject of a Department of Justice investigation. He had been accused of...
Okay, that's a very important thing. He's going to explain that United Healthcare is not only under federal investigation, but also the subject of lawsuits from people. And he's going to explain why here.
Insider trading and fraud. Furthermore, the company that he ran, United Healthcare, has been accused many times of denying legitimate claims.
Okay, it's really important to understand insider trading and fraud. There's an old kind of stupid saying that basically a fish rots from the head down. Is the CEO directly involved in decisions like who gets their health care claim denied and who gets it paid and some of these other economic decisions? The answer is no. He's not directly involved. He doesn't sit up in his office and rubber stamp and say denied, approved, denied. That's not his job. He hires people. He has people way underneath him to do that. But he is ultimately responsible for what happens in his corporation, the corporation where he makes $10 million a year, supposedly for providing proper service, doing his job, and making sure that the healthcare system, the part they're responsible for, runs smoothly. Has he done that? It doesn't appear so. We'll learn about this as we go.
Ryan had received threats and had been assigned an in-house security detail by United Healthcare for the trip to New York City. The detail was not with him when he was shot and killed, revealing a significant flaw in their protection strategy. Item number two, it seems pretty clear this was a targeted killing. Ryan was assassinated by someone who had a motive to kill him. Normally, this significantly narrows down the search for a suspect, but considering how Brian worked for United Healthcare, a very unpopular company, there are potentially millions of suspects. A lot of people were not satisfied with the company's performance. The words deny, defend, and depose being written on the cases is curious. The word depose has nothing to do with the popular delay, deny, defend motto. Maybe the killer was trying to say that he wanted to depose the leaders of insurance companies, or maybe this was just a mistake. Either way, it's clearly a reference to the bad practices of health insurance companies. Maybe the killer was trying to make the motive clear, or perhaps health insurance had nothing to do with the killing. Writing the words on the cases was intended to influence the focus of the investigation and move away from the real motive.
What he's talking about there is that there are some who have speculated that this guy, I cut out some of the background to this. This man was separated from his wife. They had a house. They have children. He and his wife have children. They've been separated for quite some time, legally separated. They're not divorced. He lives in a house separate from the rather large mansion that the family owns. He lives in a house in the nearby, and there was speculation that perhaps the wife had been involved in possibly hiring. Some people were saying this sure looks like a professional hit. It doesn't look like a professional hit to me. A professional hitman would not allow his picture to be taken in a Starbucks, and he certainly wouldn't leave his DNA around for everybody to find. I think some of these things can be discounted. The wife was contacted, and she basically had no idea. She said, like, probably her speculation was, and I tend to agree with this is somebody who's disgruntled. He'd had threats, and you heard Dr. Grande talk about that. He had a security team, and he didn't have the security team with him on the street when he was shot. 6:45 in the morning, he's on his way to a meeting. You would think that his security team would have been there. Unfortunately for him, he probably ditched them. This is why when things like when Bill Clinton was governor in Arkansas, he used to ditch his security detail so he could go have his assignations. This is why that's a bad idea. There are people who are disgruntled and angry, and who especially of a healthcare company with a track record like United Health Group.
At this point, I think it's reasonable to believe that the motive was related to health insurance, but there's no way to know for certain. Item number three, some people believe the killer must have been a master assassin, a man who had years of training, perhaps some type of mercenary who fought in many wars. There have even been discussions suggesting that he used advanced tactics. Now, the killer did use a firearm with a suppressor, which is very unusual to see in a homicide. However, based on the video of the killing and the other available evidence, I am not convinced this was a master assassin. This killer used many inferior tactics and made several other mistakes. Here are just a few of them. There was no need to carry out the murder in Manhattan. This comes with a lot of difficulties in escaping, and there will always be many cameras and many witnesses. The gunman stopped in a Starbucks on his way to commit the murder. This allowed him to be captured on video. At some point, he was even captured not wearing a mask. The killer may have left DNA or fingerprints on a coffee cup and a water bottle, which he threw away, and he may have discarded his cell phone in the alley. The police said the killer exited from the west side of Central Park. How did they know this? I would think the killer would have changed his clothing while in the park. Investigators believe the killer stayed in a hostel near 103rd Street and Amsterdam Avenue. He shared a room with two men who were unknown to him. This meant the killer was exposed to even more people who could identify him. In front of the sidewalk behind Brian and fired from a distance that was farther than necessary. He had taken Brian by surprise. Why didn't he fire from point-blank range? The killer went through all the trouble of using a weapon with a suppressor that stood out like a sore thumb in a crowded area during the shooting. The killer's weapon appeared to malfunction after the first shot. There's no way to tell from the video what exactly happened. There are several possibilities, including failure to feed, double feed, failure to extract, or failure to eject, which is also known as a stovepipe. Again, these are just a few of the possibilities. Fitting a suppressor to a pistol can lead to problems with cycling through fouling, increased back pressure, or other problems specific to suppressors. Furthermore, subsonic ammunition is sometimes used with suppressors. This ammunition may not generate enough energy to cycle the action.
I talked about that earlier. That's very, very possible. All those things he mentioned are very possible. Having not used a suppressor, having no need for one, I'm not completely familiar with some of the things that can happen with too much back pressure. But in any case, this is an important consideration. Another reason why we should not think of this man as some kind of a master assassin.
I don't know if this killer used subsonic ammunition, but it would explain the failure to cycle. Perhaps the killer knew in advance this would be an issue. This is why he didn't appear to be surprised when he had to manipulate the slide. It was his plan all along. He knew the weapon would not cycle. There's another theory which has been reported in the media which suggests there may not have been a malfunction at all. Investigators are looking at the possibility that a rare 9mm pistol with an integrated suppressor was used. The weapon could have been a BNT VP9, which is a modern version of a World War II era pistol called the Wellrod. This is a very interesting pistol. It is not semi-automatic. Rather, it is bolt action. After every shot, the operator must rotate the back of the bolt, pull it backward to eject the spent case, then push it forward to put a new cartridge in the chamber. Finally, the operator must rotate the bolt to lock it in place. This is not something that would be easy to do without practice. Again, this is an unusual weapon. It is very difficult to tell from the video of the shooting, but smoke can be seen coming from the ejection port immediately after the killer discharged the weapon. This occurred before the killer manipulated the weapon. This would not happen with a BNT VP9. Furthermore, when the killer grabbed the pistol to manipulate it, his hand was further up than would be expected to operate a BNT VP9.
I just watched a video from a weapons expert who took a look at the thing. He goes, well, the picture's kind of grainy, but that's not a VP9. He said that's a standard semi-automatic pistol based on the same thing you just heard here, smoke coming out of the ejection chamber. So this is not the case.
With that weapon, the operator grabs the bolt from the very back. It really looked like the killer was trying to grab the slide of a traditional semi-automatic pistol. It's also worth considering that the killer left behind three intact cartridges. We often see this in cases where a shooter is trying to clear the action of a weapon. Like they keep pulling the slide back and letting it move forward, and this throws intact cartridges all over the place. Again, the BNT VP9 is bolt action. I don't know if this killer had time to eject three intact cartridges and shoot Brian two times. I think this was probably a semi-automatic pistol. Either way, a revolver would have solved this killer's problem, the problem of leaving cartridges in cases behind, although this killer may have wanted to leave them behind so his message could be received. One image of the crime scene captured a cartridge that was left behind. It is difficult to tell, but when zooming in, it looks like a full metal jacket. This type of ammunition is designed for penetration rather than expansion. Typically, they are used in target practice or training. To maximize lethality, a jacketed hollow point is greatly preferred. It doesn't make any sense that the killer would have gone with a full metal jacket, considering his objective. Clearly, he was trying to kill Brian. This supports the theory that he was using subsonic ammunition. Even though this ammunition can be purchased in jacketed hollow point, maybe the killer couldn't find it, and he settled for full metal jacket. When looking at all the factors involved in the shooting, in my opinion, this killer will almost certainly be apprehended by the police. It would not surprise me if he was arrested very soon. Item number 4. The killer in this case made an effort to ensure this homicide would be all over the news. Perhaps that's why Manhattan was...
That's a really important consideration for why this was a targeted killing in Manhattan. Dr. Grande will explain this. Why would you do it in Midtown Manhattan, where all these media types are? You want your message out there. And we'll talk about that in a minute.
Was selected as the location for the attack. By leaving words on the cases, the killer connected the crime to health insurance. The reaction by many social media users to the homicide has not been one of sympathy for the murder victim, but rather an understanding of how insurance companies cheat people and how devastating this is.
Okay, I get that. Having been on the receiving end of rejections of health claims, you don't like it. You really don't like it when you say, hey, I'm paying you X number of dollars a month, sometimes $1,000 or more dollars a month, significant portion of people's incomes, but very often go into healthcare. Why? Because you can't take the chance that something happens to you that you need that healthcare. You can't roll the dice. You have to have some form of healthcare. Now, I'm editorial to follow. Obamacare has not made the situation better. It's made it much worse. What it has done is it's taken places that used to be privately run hospitals run by usually churches. That's why you'll find places like in Columbus, Riverside Methodist Hospital. Hospitals were generally run by churches. I was in a car wreck in 1981, in which I had to spend almost 3 weeks in the hospital. I was in a Catholic hospital in Battle Creek, Michigan, Lila Hospital. It was a Roman Catholic hospital, and me being at the time, what amounts to a lapsed Lutheran, it was interesting to have the nuns come and visit me in the hospital, but they did. They went around, and generally these were run as not-for-profits. Virtually all the hospitals in Columbus were started either under the auspices of a church or went for nonprofits. Nowadays, after Obamacare, almost nobody is not-for-profit. Even if they say they're not-for-profit, they are run by contract by for-profit corporations. United Health Group is one of those. The way it was set up before, for instance, if you could not afford treatment in a private hospital, generally you could go to for treatment, you could go to a county hospital. County hospitals are there to handle cases that nobody else can take because they're not insured or they have other issues going on. The fact is that county hospitals were there to take up the slack. They got federal money for it. It was all done. That has all changed. Our local county hospital is now run by a for-profit corporation, Licking Memorial Hospital. They may be not for profit, but they're for profit. You may have noticed that hospitals are springing up all over the place. It used to be there were four or five hospitals, or in Licking County, for instance, there are two that I know of. They're both owned by the same corporation. They're both run by the same corporation, and they're both in Newark. They are run by for-profit corporations or by nonprofits who are not really nonprofits, by healthcare groups. So this is the problem that people are talking about. This has not made healthcare better. It has made it possibly more available, but not better. My wife and I used to have to buy private health insurance because I was an employer. And let me tell you something, what we ended up doing was going on a cost-sharing program, a Christian cost-sharing program. We were on, members of Samaritan Ministries for years and years and years. Now, we didn't have to have too many claims. We're very healthy. We had a few. My wife had an emergency situation. We had to turn it in, and a lot of it went to deductible, but they paid for some of it, and it was very well done. But that being said, and by the way, look into those, the Samaritan, there are several of those healthcare sharing options. Look into those if you're having trouble getting private healthcare insurance. But this is a big deal.
The killer struck a nerve. He eliminated an unpopular figure. This makes me wonder if the killer was actually affected by a denied claim. Maybe the killer was simply trying to find a way to rationalize being violent, like he was antisocial and he was looking for an outlet. He was looking for a way to use violence and still be a hero. After learning about Brian and the alleged fraud, he thought it made sense to target him. The killer was hoping that people would rally behind him, like they would see him as someone who took out a bad man. Given the amount of animosity expressed by people online, maybe the killer was correct in this assumption. Those are my thoughts on the case of Brian Thompson.
This is a really, 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 really important thing, what he got at the end. This man views himself as a Robin Hood figure. The shooter. What's the problem with that? From a Christian perspective, there are major problems. There are ways that justice is supposed to be done. Do I think the CEO was a right guy and, you know, deserved no punishment? No, I don't think so. I think he's involved in a criminal enterprise. I think he's probably involved in fraud. I think he's involved in insider trading. I think he's involved. He's at least complicit in United Healthcare has the highest, by far, they are the largest healthcare, as I've said before, they are the largest provider of healthcare coverage in all its forms. They are also by far the highest rejection, claim rate rejection. United Healthcare has a 37% first-time claim rejection. Now, this is an old tactic that insurance companies use all the time. Ladies and gentlemen, I will say something. I'm sure there will be insurance agents who are listening who will be very unhappy when I say this. Insurance companies very often have a policy, an unwritten policy, but a policy nonetheless. All first claims are rejected. And a lot of second claims are rejected. Why? They hope you get tired and go away and just say, the heck with it, I'm going to cover it myself. Despite the fact that you've paid an exorbitant rate, really, for your insurance. Now, I'm with a smaller insurance company, but remember that the worst players in this are the ones who spend the most on advertising. There is a correlation between how much is spent on advertising and how fair the company is with your claim. Can I cite direct statistics for this? The answer is, I sure can't. But the fact is that think of all the ones that have these funny ads or these clever ads or name your own price or stupid things with dumb commercials with things where you can see the Statue of Liberty in the back behind the person because that's the company symbol. People that have spokesmen that everybody knows. Some of them are like a storefront. Some of them are like a guy in a pair of khakis and a red shirt. All these companies have terrible claim processing records. Okay, it's one thing with a car. It's something entirely different with healthcare. It's worse, if anything, because let's face it. I know what that little thing in 1981 cost my auto insurer because my auto insurer is who covered my health care in that hospital, in that Catholic hospital in Battle Creek, Michigan. I know what that cost because I saw the bill. And it was that thing would be five or six times that amount of money now. Just tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars for long-term care. People have put in, paid the premiums and are not getting what they should be getting out of their insurance companies. Does this make the people criminally liable? I think it does. There's fraud involved. In United Health Group has a bad reputation for using AI. Yes, there it is, folks. Your old nemesis, AI. Using AI to reject first-time claims 91% of the time. And a huge, I can't tell you the exact statistic, a huge number of falsely rejected claims because they used AI. And let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, AI is only as good as its programming. People are talking about the wonders of AI. AI can be so awful. Google had to pull their AI app because AI's artificial intelligence, they had to pull their app because if, for instance, you went to their Google app and asked for a picture, you can have it draw a picture for you, and you would ask it to draw a picture of a Nazi soldier, okay, just a Nazi soldier in the uniform, and what would you get? You'd get a Nazi soldier, and he would invariably be black or Asian or Indian, any racial group except what the Nazis were. Remember, the Nazis were racially, shall we say, they were trying to do purification of the race, quote unquote. So artificial intelligence is essentially no good unless it's programmed properly. And I have asked AI to do things like giving me a rundown on historical events, and the stuff I get back bears no resemblance to what actually happened, because I'm an amateur historian. Details are completely wrong. People who are involved, it's completely wrong. What's wrong with that? People trust it for no known reason. Somebody asked AI to draw a picture of the founding fathers, and again, the Google AI, and they were all mixed race. When I say mixed race, they were all kinds of different. Never a white person never appeared. Why? Because Google programmed it to basically avoid showing white people. Okay, that's just dumb. And it's bad programming. That's why these claims are rejected. Biblically speaking, should we be in favor of someone being murdered in vigilante style because they've done something wrong? And the answer is, we sure shouldn't. Now, are there instances where vigilantism was done in the Bible? Yeah, there was a whole section in the law, in the Pentateuch, that talked about the creation of sanctuary cities. So if you accidentally killed someone, you could go to one of these sanctuary cities to hide from relatives who were sworn for revenge. Okay? That's what it was for. To avoid vigilantism and justice, you were supposed to go to the gates, bring your complaint to the gates to whoever was the elders or the king sitting in the gate to pass judgment. But a lot of people took things into their own hands. King David was a vigilante at one point when he was on the run from King Saul, who had sworn to kill him. He actually went out, and he wasn't a vigilante per se. What he was doing was running a sort of a side protection deal. He would go around and he would protect farmers and ranchers, and they weren't ranchers then, but they were people raising cattle and sheep and that kind of thing, and he would protect them from marauders. And then he would go to them and say, you know, we ran off these marauders. Could you help us out by giving us some food or some sustenance and that kind of thing? That's not what this guy was doing. He's not interested. He's interested in getting revenge for something personal. I will guarantee it. Of course, we don't know who he is, and we don't know what it's all about. David would go there and ask for, and people would gladly give him support because they knew who he was and they knew what he was on the run from, and they were grateful for what he had done. So he wasn't a standard protection scheme where if you give me this, I will protect your land. That's not what he was doing. He was going and saying, I did this. Could you help me? And they would do it. That's not what this fella's doing. Biblically speaking, we have a duty to be not thinking. And let me tell you, the ratio of people who are happy over the murder of this man is gigantic. This is an outlet for people who have been, as far as they're concerned, cheated by their insurance companies. This is not a right attitude to have. We need to have a Christian attitude and be in prayer for this man's family and for the man who shot him to come to the realization that what he did was not the right thing, but absolutely the wrong thing. Okay, I didn't get anywhere near as far as I wanted to today. There's more on statistics and things, but I think this is an important thing for us to think about. You know what I think. I want to know what you think. You can get a hold of me at chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's my email address. And let me know what you think. And I would ask that you would join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.